In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello, everybody. It's episode 79 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. We've got a full house. Rick, hello.
Hey, I'm alive. Me and Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, we're rocking it here tonight.
2 weeks in a row as well. Do I need to sit down and like...
buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah. So, friends, the In Tech We Trust podcast is really deep priority to me. So much so that I have scurried home from Boston just this morning to take this call. And then a week ago, I scurried home from New Orleans. I'm really trying to adjust my schedule for my own personal. I love you guys. I love this podcast group. I feel bad when I miss it. So I'm doing my best to make it a priority and be here, even if I do have me, the little rat, and Mickey Mouse Clubhouse rocking it here in the home office.
And Backup Tron is also doing a backup copy of the podcast just in case mine goes tits up, yeah?
Yeah, we did not go to the tertiary Google Voice record, however, but we should be good.
Cool. Mark, have you got any cool stories or anything?
No, but this week I'm drinking coffee instead of beer because I think Whoa. The beer just made me like the angriest guy possible.
Lauren, you're not doing your hair this week again, are you?
Nope, it's done for this week, so I am just trying to stay awake right now. But
have you got a beer?
No, I had too many last night. We had a trivia night for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society that I kind of helped run, and so I imbibed too much, and now I'm struggling.
Gabriel as well?
Yo, I'm here. Yes.
You know, we've got Rick on, and we've got you, Gabriel, with no background noise. This is unheard of.
Are we both at home, too, by the way?
I'm sitting at my desk in the office in my house, and I have, like, my headphone mic on, so it's near my face and it's not dangling down near my jaw.
And there's no jackhammers downstairs.
There's no jackhammers. You may hear a dog or child on occasion.
Didn't it sound like a freight train was going through your house 1 week or something?
Yes, because there was.
Hey, I've got a question, right? So has anybody ever been to AWS reInvent, the summit?
No, I've not. I've always wanted to go. I just didn't have a really good reason to go.
So it's interesting, yeah, right? I really don't know much about it, but I log into Amazon Web Services probably most days, and for like quite a while now, they've been advertising AWS reInvent. It's like, it's at the back end of November, so it's a ways out, right? And it's like a 5-day conference. And considering I'm such like a heavy user of Amazon Web Services, I was like, you know what? Should I think about going to that? I mean, 5 days is a long time, right? I'd have to take a look at the agenda and see, you know, whether there was a day or two that would appeal to me. I didn't think any of us had been to it, which is kind of bizarre in the day and age of cloud, is it not?
Well, I look at these events a lot. I mean, my team, my collective brand tries to hit a lot of different things, but in my particular ecosystem, we don't hit this one very deep, like in the form of a partnership of such, so hence we're not involved. But my mate is very much interested in this. He's probably going to go, but my real question is, Nigel, are you going to break your no travel or grumpy travel rule for this one? It's Las Vegas. It's far away.
Yeah. To be honest, I would if, you know, there was like, say, 2 or 3 days worth of stuff that I thought, you know, would attract my attention. Because I get right that there's like however many different fully, you know, bona fide services within AWS, and a bunch of them don't really appeal to me. You know, a lot of them are very, very focused towards developer, and I wouldn't want to, you know, hang around to stuff that wasn't of interest to me. But I'm definitely going to keep my eye on it. I'd really be interested to hear back from any listeners if they've been to one before, because I've been to a moderate number of conferences and the likes, and no doubt you guys go to a lot more than me. But yeah, none of us have been to AWS reInvent. You know what? I've no idea even how many people go. You know, does it compare to the likes of VMworld, EMC World? Probably not Oracle.
Well, the unfortunate thing is that you can't tell much from their website in regards to the specific content. Now, it's even worse is that they just say Las Vegas. They don't tell you where in Las Vegas on the website. Now, I think that's important because you can quickly discern what I call ceiling capacity by the venue they select. Okay, so for example, if you're looking at something like the Cosmopolitan or the Aria, you're probably going to be 5,000 persons or less. If you're looking at the Sands Expo, you can be up to 50 or 60,000 if you take the whole thing.
Did anybody else notice, I think like maybe a week or two ago now, that there was some kind of formal, oh, it's been 10 years of Amazon Web Services? Because you know what, that one really slipped me by. Oh, I take it that nobody else noticed either then. So yeah, apparently something like, and I was just looking at it earlier, so I might be right about this. I think like the 14th of March, or maybe it was the 16th, was formally when the first bona fide Amazon Web Services service went live 10 years ago. But it made me wonder, and this could be like a totally stupid thing, I might embarrass myself here, but has Amazon Web Services peaked? Or has it still got a lot of glory days ahead of it?
I mean, I don't think we've hit peak Amazon yet.
No way, not by a long shot.
We haven't even hit peak cloud. We may have hit peak use of the word cloud.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think it's just starting to get really ramped up to the point now where it is becoming, you know, you're starting to see some organizations take a cloud-first approach to everything that they're building. If it's new, if it's next gen, if it's, you know, if it's containerized, if it's an application you're going to push with a serious web presence, it's Amazon, Google, and Microsoft first.
If peak is a measure of market share, then Amazon's probably already hit its peak. I think Azure and Google Cloud are going to catch up, but in terms of the overall business size, it's far from its peak.
Speaking of Google catching up, they just announced that they're opening 12 new regions as well. So, yeah, I think that you're right on the nose there, Mark.
Yeah, that's big because, I mean, you know, AWS doesn't have the kind of region depth that Microsoft and Google could potentially come forward with, or at least they've just not invested in that same means to provide more regional support for others. I mean, the bulk of their services come out of Virginia in the east, and then, you know, the other sites in the west, but they don't have that big, large European presence, and we all know that, or at least, you know, I always tend to think that the public cloud space in Europe is a lot more challenging based on regional rules and geolocation of data and whatnot.
Let me just tease your brains here with some facts, because they had this like infographic on one of the Amazon web pages saying, oh, you know, in the last 10 years, this is what's happened at AWS. So does anybody know what the first ever service was?
Got to be S3, I would think.
Okay, but so bingo. That's the one that they say. I think there was like some kind of queuing service that was available first, but whether or not that was like bona fide Amazon Web Services, I don't know. But yeah, they're saying that S3 was the first service. How many requests per second do you reckon that peaks at each day?
At least 2.
Play it safe. Do you want to go higher or lower?
I'll go higher. I'll say, I bet at peak second, I bet it's in the, at a peak number, I bet it's 5 million.
Okay. So apparently it's 1 million. That's still a lot per second, right? Any ideas on how many new features AWS released last year, 2015?
Say 30.
Okay.
725.
722. Oh,
I thought it was a million a second.
Yeah, good. So apparently 722 new features. Look, who knows what they mean by features, right? Guess how many core services?
40.
Yeah, I'd say it got to be almost 50 core services that
okay.
they're offering.
70 plus core services, which I take to mean 71. 10 years it took them to reach a 10 billion run rate, right? There were three other companies in the tech space that reached a 10 billion run rate in less than 30 years. Any guesses who those three companies were?
Apple.
Well, no, you'd have to go. You have to go back to the beginning of their first 10
is it
years.
Within 10 years or 10
yeah,
years?
Yeah, no, 10 billion run rate within less than 30 years.
10 billion in 30 years. So
yeah.
Oh, 10 billion in 30 years?
Yeah.
It's possible it could be Apple, but I don't think so. Could they have gotten to 10 billion by 2005 or whatever? Or? I
mean, well, I'm just thinking of a moving update window of 30 years.
Yeah, right. I mean, no, I mean, Apple certainly turned it all around in the aughts. And, you know, were they 10
so I think ahead? It's 30 years from when the service or whatever was founded, right? So maybe Apple slipped outside of that.
I mean, EMC would fit into that.
Right, Coat. Yep, they're one. They took 27 years to get to a 10 billion run rate.
Hewlett Packard.
No, not on the list.
No.
And neither is Intel.
Nope, not on the list.
Cisco.
No.
Oh, really?
Was Compaq in there?
No, they're not. No.
Ooh.
IBM.
Nope.
No.
So Compaq, I think IBM, like, first companies
to get to
old,
like a
they?
Billion. Yeah.
Mm.
So put you out your misery, right? So it was Microsoft. Took 22 years to get to a 10 billion run
sure.
rate.
Yeah.
Oracle.
Yeah, they're good.
23 years. And EMC 27. Now, I know like $1 billion was a lot more back in the day than it is now, right?
Yeah.
But 10 years to get to a 10 billion run rate, it's pretty fast when you look at the rest of the competition there.
Yeah, when you look at those other companies, you really, you know, that really puts an interesting perspective on Amazon. They're growing faster than huge industry stalwarts.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. So let's see what we've got on the agenda for this week. Under tech news, just a couple of things. One that we covered last week, but there's more and more information coming out. So Dropbox's Magic Pocket now hosting 90% of its storage as they say goodbye to Amazon Web Services. Google looking to remove the ops from DevOps might be worth a conversation. In more kind of business type news, Google bags another customer. So Home Depot joined the Google bandwagon, the Diane Greene machine, and EMC files more of the same against Pure Storage. So I know we talked about Dropbox last week, right? But it felt to me, at least at the time, that I didn't really have an idea of any of the detail, what was going on. It was just this kind of headline, hey, Dropbox have been putting in a bunch of effort to get a lot of storage off of Amazon Web Services, and now they've got 90% in-house. So it seems, right, just from reading through a few different articles, yes, they have exited 90% of their storage from Amazon Web Services, but apparently they always had, like, the metadata services and stuff on site, so kind of, I don't know if it's right to say, but the brains of Dropbox was always hosted in-house. But they've apparently called this new in-house infrastructure that they've built, they're calling it Magic Pocket. And it's all, obviously, the storage side, right, is all custom storage. Yeah, they're not buying arrays from vendors or anything like that. But they are hosting over half an exabyte of data. I mean, that is something to brag about at the bar with your storage compadres, right?
I wish I sold it to them.
Hell yeah. It's insane. So apparently
that's
as well.
A lot of storage, yeah.
Yeah.
And when you look at the box, I mean, that one article that was in Computer World talked about their what they call the discotheque.
Oh, yeah.
It's 1 petabyte in a essentially, what, a 7U form factor?
Yeah.
That's a lot of storage. 793 terabytes in 4U.
Pretty impressive. We were talking, I think, was it maybe last week's episode or the week before, that tape might actually outlive the spinning disk, and we said, you know, wouldn't that be hilarious? Well, interesting, right? Of course, they've got flash cache and stuff like that spotted around their environment. They use NVMe for flash caches and things. But long-term storage apparently is predominantly placed on 10 terabyte and 14 terabyte rotating rust with a mixture of PMR and SMR drives, so I think perpendicular and shingled magnetic recording drives. So their long-term stuff is still on the spinning stuff, so they obviously still see a long future in that, right?
Oh, I mean, I think everybody does. I mean, I don't think it's going away anytime soon. You know, you look at kind of the roadmaps from some of the drive manufacturers, and they are focusing on some of this kind of what we call cold storage or long-term storage, where, you know, you have a 25 or 50 terabyte disk that can hold data. You can only write to it so many times. Because of the way they're constructed. But that's great, because if all you're doing is reading that data, these giant object store pools, then density is king.
Thing is, right, I thought we were kind of at least approaching the point where we were going to get equal or maybe even better densities from flash drives.
Well,
am
you
I
do
off
have
the
15-point-something terabyte flash drives are coming out soon. I mean, but these are kind of what we consider a commercial drive. Storage manufacturers would pick up and use, not necessarily consumers per se, but they go into like more of a professional storage solution. You know, 15 terabyte for all flash, that's a large surface to store data on. It's at some point, you know, you kind of have to have the density make sense for certain types of workloads, but not necessarily all.
Funny story, guys. Last night at dinner, I was chewing it up with a mate who worked at, I think it would have been IBM, and like 1991, and he was put into the group that did tape storage systems at that time. And he went in and said, he told me a story of their product manager, you know, of the tape system, says, okay, guys, 91, tape is going to die this year, but we're going to go out with a bang, right? That type of thing. They knew it was on the way out. And that was like, you know, 20 plus years ago. So, you know, you think about tape going away, Gabe's comments. I think if anything's at risk, it's that rotational storage for rebuild times. There's a need for archive, offline, cold storage, whatever you want to call it. There's a need for the highest performance stuff. It's stuff in the middle that I'm really scared about.
And didn't you say last week, Mark, I think, that everything that's going on, is it Western Digital that are in the process of acquiring SanDisk?
Yeah, they had a string of layoffs last week. I mean, they're trying to figure out how to make the economics work there, right? So, you know, disk drive company that's buying SanDisk, a company that has a larger market cap than they do, you know, in this market that's, you know, they've got a wide variety of products, but they've been doing some acquisitions too. And now they're taking on the largest one, and they're going to have to figure that one out.
Right? I mean, I might be off on my numbers here, but I think it was something like Western Digital are valued at about $17 billion, and they're looking to acquire SanDisk for $19 billion. So that, does that say they see the writing on the wall there?
Yeah, they certainly know that they have to pivot. You know, they've got to be in the flash business in a big way, and they went out, you know, not after... You know, they went out after one of the largest flash companies out there, the flash device company, SanDisk, trying to figure out how to take them in, you know. And I'm pretty sure that Western Digital is a much larger company in terms of headcount and locations and all of that. But the fact is, the valuations are where they are, and they've got to do this. And it's certainly transforming that company as people have been marched out the door.
Mm. Yeah, well, you've seen the same thing happen at Toshiba as well. You know, they're doing layoffs, but they also have two new fabs coming online. Or they have one fab that's just being finished, and then they're looking to build another entire fab at the same facility.
You know, when you said fab, one thing I want to just share, absolutely random. Everybody know what a fob is, like a car or like your secure ID token type of thing?
Yeah.
This fob. What does FOB stand for?
Fresh off the boat.
Freight on board.
Well, that's for shipping, but for like the little cars things, the car key controller things, I think it stands for frequency on board. So that'll win you a bet at a bar if you want.
I just didn't think it meant anything. I just thought it was a word.
It's not a word.
But you wouldn't like capitalize it, would you? My key fob.
I know. It's like, where is this word?
I mean, it's a noun.
From? I like my fob. Gabe, I really like your fob.
Frequency on board.
Lauren has quite a stylish fob.
Well, no, there's actually a fob has other, you know, so go look at the definition. A chain attached to a watch for carrying in a waistcoat or waistband pocket.
I know it stood for frequency on board. I'm telling you, we have like anglicized this word here, and it is not cool.
Ooh, here's another one for it. A verb, deceitfully attempt to satisfy someone by making excuses or giving them something inferior. Ooh.
Fobbing us again?
What?
I just asked if he was fobbing us again.
Apparently I am.
Well, you.
Origin is German.
Fob you.
Gabe, why did you have to fob it up again?
Fob.
Actually, it does sound really versatile, actually, all this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it's an acronym or if it's an actual term.
We got to get, like, this is deeper than Wikipedia. I'm going to take that as my own personal research, guys.
Cool. Well, you do that. I just want to say one last thing about Magic Pocket here, Dropbox's own infrastructure, right? So they have built their infrastructure across three regions, and it's taken them, check this out as a project, right, 2.5 years to build and migrate to where they are at the moment. That is some hard freaking work, that is. So, yeah, very cool,
one
though.
One brick at a time.
Absolutely.
Magic Pocket, I like the name. It reminds me of... I would have gone with Bag of Holding, but Magic Pocket definitely has a
term to it. Apparently, when they started Dropbox early on, You know how it's just like a folder or set of folders on your drive that magically sync to the cloud? Apparently, their internal name for that folder was the Magic Pocket on your drive. So when they came to build their infrastructure, their own infrastructure, they said, oh, why don't we call the infrastructure Magic Pocket? I mean, I don't know how official it is, right? It might be just some internal code name or whatever, but...
I'm just sad I can't stick my hand in Gabe's Magic Pocket.
That oh, no. Might find his fob in there.
Good Lord.
Might find his tiny little fob in there. Anyway, does anybody know that...
If it's on the pocket, maybe that could be fist on...
Oh.
Fist on, bro.
This is devolving quickly.
That escalated quickly.
This is actually out of control. We got a lady on the line, guys.
Come on. Who's that? Hey, is anybody aware that Google's Cloud Next conference is going on at the moment?
Nope.
Yeah, so I'm going to see if I can get a replay of Diane's keynote tomorrow at some point, because obviously it's late here in the UK, so I might have a listen to that tomorrow if I've got time. But apparently as part of a keynote, she's been talking about taking the ops out of DevOps. So never mind IT automation and all that kind of stuff. Apparently the Google Cloud just works. And they're using this term, and I wonder whether it's going to be a term that we'll hear a lot of going forward, but where developers can literally just write and run. So write and run is like the term she's been coming up with.
Code is infrastructure.
I'm not going to pretend I really understand what she means by that, and I don't know whether she does either. I don't know, being like high level and what have you. But yeah, so she's saying things like App Engine and BigQuery and Container Engine and stuff in the Google Cloud. They just work, and developers can just pick them up and just work with them straight away, pretty much making anybody in IT ops surplus to requirements, I guess. Do we see the role of operations in IT? And I don't mean in like the hip new cloud stuff, right? But in more traditional enterprises and what have you. Do we think that's being squeezed already? And if it is, I don't know, what are the timescales before IT operations gets wound down within IT, within enterprise IT? Or is that never?
You know, Netflix is doing the same thing. They call it no ops. And actually, my boss has a slide in one of his decks about kind of, you know, if you're going to fight so hard against DevOps, would you prefer no ops?
Yeah.
So,
is that one of John's slides? It's interesting. I mean, that's Netflix. And I would say Netflix are a born in the cloud company. I mean, might be wrong there, but that's certainly what they feel like, right? But I think more in traditional enterprises, is ops being squeezed and is DevOps rising there? Or is all this stuff really very much still on the cloud side of things?
If you look at, you know, even what Google says about their own stuff is that, you know, they built these services originally to serve how they operate, and they operate a little bit different than I would say your traditional average enterprise is. And I think that all of the players in this space have had to have that lesson learned, and adjust their services, their service offerings, and their platforms to accommodate the traditional enterprise, right? They had to, you know, not everybody builds super cutting edge, you know, Borg-like infrastructure to serve their customers. There's still a lot of people that build it very basically. And what we're seeing, I think, is realignment with a lot of these guys who've done things kind of their way and try to adapt their model to the customer. And now they're having to turn around and go back and adjust themselves to meet the needs of the customer more so than, you know, how they would operate traditionally for their original intended purposes.
I don't see this being necessarily taken on by a majority of companies just because it's difficult, you know? I mean, it's certainly possible and kind of cool when you think about it, but I feel like we're a long way away from something like that becoming the norm.
Is it even the right route to take? Because, look, developers are great people, no doubt, right? But, I don't know, you've got to have a certain kind of head on you and a certain kind of experience and what have you to really run a proper enterprise IT shop, right? And look, I know that these things are all evolving, and what it was like 10 years ago is not what it's going to be like in 10 years in the future, right? But still, you're going to need some group and some people whose sole responsibility, right, is keeping the ship afloat, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think it's improper to say that, you know, you're going to get rid of either the dev or the ops. It just may be that, you know, you're not going to combine the two the way that we've kind of envisioned. Or at least the marketing has envisioned those two organizations or groups working together. I mean, there's still plenty of companies out there that don't have any developers and staff. They buy off-the-shelf hardware or software, and they use it internally to meet their needs. You know, they may never have to do any kind of automation. They may see no benefit in doing other stuff. I mean, I still run into occasionally a customer that's a greenfield non-virtualization environment.
Oh,
I mean, those are amazing to come and walk into because you can collapse.
U.S. government.
not even, yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh my God, you have three racks of like super micro servers and promised storage arrays. Dude, did I just step into 2004?
Well, you can look really smart when you do that, you know.
I think part of the problem with the idea of DevOps is that it requires full stack engineers, people that really understand everything from applications to details about storage networking and servers and the whole thing. And I think we're finding out, talked about it before, that people that have that broad a skill set are hard to find.
And expensive?
Well, they're expensive, but they're just hard to find. And so the notion that you can actually do this may be wrong.
It's right. A nice idea if you're Google or Facebook, right? But if you're, you know, you're Bob's Big Boy Burger, not necessarily going to be the first route you take. I mean, I always find it interesting when I go out and, you know, like I've been approached by Amazon and a couple other, you know, cloud service companies. You look at some of their job requirements, it's like they want you to have like every skill set under the sun. And I was like, and you want to pay what? It's like, maybe you guys should break some of this stuff apart because it's very convoluted. And it's like, all right, well, you're going to have relational database experience. You have to be able to code in Ruby and Perl and Go. And then you have to be able to know, you know, networking. And I'm like, yeah, those people are pretty few and far between. They really have a comprehensive understanding and ability to integrate all of those pieces together. And yet that's what they're trying to hire for. And I think that's because, yeah, I don't have those skills. I'm dumb.
No, you're not dumb, but you brought something up very important. Did you know that Big Boy is really big in Japan?
Really?
Yeah, they've got like three times as many restaurants as they do in the States and Japan.
So is Tom Waits. Well, he had a song called "I'm Big in Japan."
I'm big in Japan. I got Twitter people there.
I bet you are.
Yeah, man,
there's probably statues of the Rickatron in Japan.
Well, Nigel, we had fun in Japan. That was a fun place.
Man. We did, yeah. I'm quite big in Japan because I'm 6 foot one.
Oh,
you're 6 foot one?
Like, I'm quite big in Japan.
Should we just alienate our Japanese listeners this week then?
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
all two of them.
Yeah. So was that before your haircut?
No, I was about 6 foot five with that.
Yeah. Why is it
the fro? Like,
yeah.
Why do you always use Bob's Big Boys as a company game?
If I use it more than once?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
See, and I thought you it was know what? Just I have something you'd made up.
No, it's an actual place. I mean, there's one where I was a kid. We used to go for breakfast when I was a kid. Maybe there's some kind of mental DNA thing that's got Bob's Big Boy stuck in the brain.
It's deep in your childhood. Absolutely.
They make awesome hash browns, man. And as Lauren can attest, I am a lover of hash browns.
It's true.
I think you should replace that in your taxonomy with Dick's.
Oh, you know, Dick's burgers are great too. I'm gonna go get a bag of Dick's and eat them next time I'm in Seattle.
So Big Boy is really big in Ohio, where I'm at. There's one in Anderson, Indiana, close to Lauren. And there's a smattering around both Northern and Southern California. And there's a whole big littering all up in the Japans.
There was one in where I grew up. I just remember going there. And
yeah, it's my childhood. Yeah,
as a bigger kid, I remember going in and they had schooners of beer. It was like this cup, like a super goblet. And I'm like, whoa. This is great.
Oh, I think I've seen
these guys. A schooner of PBR, right? It's like for $3.50, it's happy hour at Bob's Big Boy. And you can get like this, you know, a trough of beer in your cup.
What do you call a Whopper at Dick's?
Magnum.
Single or a double?
Do they have herpes where you guys are?
Do they have what?
Herpes.
Oh, herpes.
Herpes. Oh, they got that. I guarantee you.
Well, everybody. They or me? No.
I've never heard of herpes.
What's a herpes, and from whence does it come?
Herpes is a burger chain. It was up in Washington State where I grew up. And, you know, it was kind of like a barf burger. You go in, we would always go in because it was 25 cent hamburger and 35 cent cheeseburger, no matter what you were doing.
How old are you?
Did they have like flavor holes? Was it like White Castle?
It's kind of like it, but it was actually, you know, it was kind of, it was more like a a Dick's burger than it was a full-fledged traditional hamburger. But they still exist. Holy cow.
I've got my favorite geo-located North American burger. I love Halo Burger. They put green olives on up there, and that's Flint, Michigan. And then I got
my Whataburger right now too.
Dude, I'm telling you, the big boy, you gotta ask for it Ohio style. Okay, so don't be messing around with no California big boy, big taboo.
We get the In-N-Out Burger that whenever VMworld is held in California, all the people from around the planet come in, and there's a big rush on In-N-Out Burger for some reason.
Yeah, they want animal-style fries and all that.
I'm not a fan. I'm the only person in the world, I think, that doesn't love In-N-Out Burger.
I'm underwhelmed.
I don't love it.
You're not on the show anymore.
That's so good. And it's so average as well. Tom Hollingsworth took
don't even
the
have hamburgers in the UK.
No, I know. But when I come to the States, I do love your burger chains and stuff over there, and I wish we had them over here. But In-N-Out Burger is just it was very much meh. I could take it all.
Yep. I'm with you, Nigel. Oh, please do.
I could go into a whole dissertation into the regional fast food chains like Taco Time and Rally Burger.
Yeah. And Gabe and I got a story, and Lauren as well, for every city. I can throw down my favorite, food wars,
Hey, let's talk technology.
Yeah. Sadly, let's get it back on piste. Anybody think that behind all of this Google stuff that's going on, by the way, they got another customer this week, like we mentioned earlier, Home Depot. They're a more traditional enterprise than the likes of Snapchat and Airbnb and Spotify and people like that, right? They're climbing aboard the Google Cloud. Does anybody think this is actually part of the Diane Green effect? Is her effect kicking in here?
Yeah, I mean, now there's a little more focus. There's somebody who's strategically directing this that is not cut from the Google cloth, kind of bring in different processes, different ways of thinking. And it looks like they've allowed her to kind of do what she wants to do and let her run with it, which is what you want, right? You want to bring an outsider. If you can bring an outsider in, somebody who's been successful in one realm or another, you want to trust their judgment and allow them to kind of run the show going forward. And I think what you're seeing is she's putting her stamp on the Google Cloud portion of it. I think it's been fairly successful. She's had a good run of press and not a lot of missteps yet. You compare it to some others, when Meg Whitman took over HP and just the long slog of meh and little to show for it other than breaking the company in half.
Well, they put another letter on the name. So two letters to three. That's a big jump.
They should have done the E upside down or something, or maybe the P upside down to compete with Dell. Dell has that kind of funky E that goes off to the side.
I'm going to be a D.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you think that Diane gets involved in conversations with CIOs and CEOs, when they're striking a big deal, potentially this Home Depot?
Hell yeah. Companies?
Yeah?
The CEO always pops in.
I'm sure she does.
I've been to so many EBCs, and I've presented at so many where the CEO pops in for, 15 or 20 minutes to, big customer. Yeah, CEO is a strategic asset in building a truly partnership alliance with certain types of customers, especially when you have very large deals on the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a legit closing tool.
Yeah, and I've had my CEO at several companies come in to sit with me and present in customers in terms of things that were very tight or down to the wire, that's part of the sales process, right? They're like the ultimate. They're supposed to be the ultimate closer.
There's no better resource to deliver the vision, which, enterprise investments, those types of clientele, they very much are taking the vision as part of the initial investment, right? So, yeah, that better be happening.
You know what I was more thinking, actually, was rather than her coming in to, close deals and things that are on the edge, I was because she has a history with VMware and what have you, and, she's probably got a lot of CEOs' phone numbers in her phone book and stuff. I was thinking, is she cold calling people and opening the door? I mean, I'm sure she's not there cold calling people and stuff, but
wouldn't surprise me if she has some kind of executive meeting or she's some kind of event where there's people at that she has a discussion with a CIO or a CEO of another organization to ask about the potential of having a discussion. Cool. She's not going to cold call somebody unless it's, that's part of that role, right? You're constantly looking to build things. I mean, I don't think it's something she does on a daily basis, maybe, but, it just depends on the type of CEO or her management style is. I've never worked for her. I've never met her. So
she's very technical. Diane is a very technical person, but, she's it's been a long time since she's left VMware, and she's been networking with a lot of people. She's been on boards, you know, she's been rubbing elbows and all that. She's got a network of connections. You know, she's not a, I mean, she's pretty geeky, but, you know, she can call people up and get their attention. And I'm sure she's done some of that. And she probably was doing some of that before she took the job. I think it was, you know, she took her position at Google, you know, pretty seriously, you know, prior to this role.
And the other thing that's going to be happening is take a business client, you know, an enterprise deal or even small, I guess, but and they've got like an opportunity that's working. This is an opportunity to go sideways where somebody like Diane could leverage her personal network to someone she does know to kind of, you know, come back around to the group that's working on that decision and then, you know, leverage, refer, you know, push the network. That type of stuff happens all the time, I'm sure, up at that level as well.
So do you think she's got the potential to literally drive them forward and make them more competitive with the likes of Azure and AWS?
Yes, I think I think her biggest value will be in a stick and providing direction and motivation to the people working on Google Cloud. Both those things, like work your ass off now and do this. I think she'll have a pretty demanding style, but I think she's going to bring focus there, you know, to what Gabriel said earlier. When you talk about customers like Home Depot, to me, the biggest thing about Diane talking to customers like that is finding out, what does Home Depot want? My guess is that Home Depot wanted to do this because they felt like they could get what they wanted and get what they were asking for, get what they were looking for. If Diane can meet with customers like that and say, oh, this is what you guys want, I bet there's another 20 companies out there, good-sized companies that want this same kind of stuff. We're going to develop that. And she's got the wherewithal then to drive it through engineering because she does have, you know, a technical mind. So she can take that input from big customers and turn it into, you know, drivers for product management. Most valuable thing about Diane is that she's got this connections and she can talk to customers and then she can turn that internally into, you know, into technology discussions at Google.
Well, and if she's got a lot of on-premises experience already with VMware and all of that, and that's what these companies are doing right now, you know, I would think that would be pretty easy for her, I guess, to know what their concerns are for going to the cloud. So, you know, that kind of helps the fight.
Some numbers on Google Cloud, right? Apparently last year, their cloud business, I'm going to say a mere, right, was a mere $500 million US dollars. Now, it's a lot of money, right? But when you compare it with the $74.5 billion that the parent company Alphabet did, that $500 million is like less than 1%. It's like it's barely more than 0.5% of their revenue. If we take into consideration, Amazon Web Services is a $10 billion run rate business. Currently, Google Cloud is $500 million, but with Diane at the helm driving things, in a year's time, is it realistic to think that that could be a $1 billion business?
I think so. I mean, like I said earlier, they're expanding the regions even that they're going to be in. And I know one of the first ones is going to be Japan, which, you know, I think is going to be huge. So I think it's absolutely reasonable to expect it to get up to a billion pretty quickly here.
All I'm thinking is, right, was it Snapchat that we were talking about last week?
Spotify,
yeah.
Right, okay. Then we've got Home Depot or Home Depot, is it? I don't know. As they start bringing these marquee customers on, assuming that they're not giving it away for free right now, I wonder how many big customers it takes to really start pushing that north. I mean, look, from 500 million to a billion in a year is probably a big ask, but...
No, they can do it.
Okay. I mean, I think that, you know, you'll see breakout items as they start to coalesce and hire sales staff and expand that business. It's all about getting boots on the ground and getting exposure and getting big wins that are public so that you build a little bit of thought leadership and momentum.
I think the bigger question is what happens if they don't do it?
Yeah.
Right? I bet their goals are bigger than that.
Everyone gets fired.
I bet a lot of salespeople do if they don't.
Here's the thing. It's not like they're introducing a product from scratch that's brand new to the market. I think what they're doing is they're finally starting to spend the time and effort it takes to get revenue streams built that are lasting and predictable. You know, they're building pipeline, makes they're sense. Building a funnel, and then they need to go out there and close that business. And what you'll see is, you know, over the course of a year, you should see some progress moving forward. You're already starting to see it now with the marquee customers coming on board. And then, you know, how do they translate those very large customers that, you know, obviously get kind of certain types of deals down to the rank and file companies that, you know, can make up the bulk of your minimal, you know, your run rate, right? It's kind of like the VMware model where it's like, you know, 90% of VMware customers have, you know, less than 10 hosts or whatever it is, right? There's a lot of little players that use your services, and then there's those giant whales that every now and then come around and, you know, you harvest them.
So I wonder how many other customers they're getting that, you know, aren't mentioned in press releases.
Yeah. They're not a startup. They don't have to, like, really kind of pimp the small ones. What they want to do is talk about the Home Depots of the world, and then, you know, everybody's been to Home Depot in the United States, you know.
Well, you know, this Home Depot got quite a discount for the ability to use their name, right?
Oh, and there no are some doubt.
But I know of companies, they get all of their gear for free because of the marketing muscle behind what they're able to deliver when they say, you know, used on product X.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, I'm like, and then some of them are big, and I'm like, damn. They almost become like executive briefing centers for themselves, right? You know, there's a couple of like, you can go in there and like, oh, wow, you can come here and see all these products that we use on a day-to-day basis, and you can see it percolate through their press releases and their presentations and their marketing and their commercials and all these other things. And I'm like,
some of them are motion picture companies.
That would be correct.
So just wrapping up on this Google Cloud thing then, interestingly, Synergy Research had a piece that was quoted in one of the articles that I read, said Amazon Web Services has 31% of the cloud market, Azure has 9%. Check this out. Number three, IBM has 7%, with Google trailing at only 4%. But it sounds like they're going in the right direction at least. And let's just say they've got more percent than Oracle have, so they can't be that bad. One last thing to mention before we go to hot or not. Pure Storage being taken to the cleaners again by EMC. So they had to pay $14 million, or they were ordered to pay $14 million sometime last week for copyright or IP infringement to do with Dedupe. Well, apparently EMC are going for the throat again and saying even more of your products are in violations. And they've sold more of these products, so they're expecting maybe they'll get more, or the courts will award them even more than $14 million this time around. So, yeah, anything worth talking about on that front?
When I was doing Emulex, we went through a patent suit with Broadcom, and, you know, there was all this things you couldn't sell and things you could only sell certain places, and pre-existing contracts that were able to sell things, and then embargoes. But it was for one specific product line. What they've done here in this particular instance is they went after the initial pair of Pure systems, the 300 and 400, and now they've come back and said, oh, by the way, you've released these M-series arrays that all have the same infringing technology on them, and so we need to reevaluate based on that because, you know, the sales and damage to us has been much more significant since then. They're basing that original award off of just the first year and a half of sales of the product. Now that they've come out the second line and they've gone at a much larger run rate business, the damages could be significantly higher, and so they're going to go back to the courts and reevaluate for that. I mean, the other part of it was that I think Chris Miller had a big long article with all kinds of internal emails that kind of focused on should have EMC bought Pure instead of fighting them. The crazy thing about a lawsuit is when you do discovery, you know, you get access to internal emails and internal work products and all of these things. You know, anybody who pretty much works on that legal court case can leak some of those documents, and that looks like what happened here. This is the stuff, you know, that the highly technical and highly competitive sales organizations, it's not something you ever want to leak out. Because it kind of like, it's how the sausage is made, and it's just not pretty.
Never mind that.
It's different than a kill sheet.
Much different than a kill sheet, yes.
Yeah, but that email that Chad's apparently sent about Vaughn, that's great. That one-liner, I just want to be clear. I can and do take Vaughn out to the woodshed whenever we cross paths. He's Bush League. Now, I had to look up what Bush League means. That means he's like a minor player, right? He's like a nothing.
It's a sports term in the United States.
I take him out to the woodshed.
That's what your dad does when he's going to kick your ass when you've been bad.
Then you bring up that Samsung belt, the welt.
Yeah, the welt. I'm going to give you a welt, a digital one, right on your ass.
Oh, never mind. Anyway, speaking of welts and stuff like that, should we do hot or not again?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Go on then, Lauren. You are like the legend of hot or not.
Let's keep the streak going. I was reading an article about hotels in space, and apparently there are a few different companies trying to do this, you know, in 2016 even, but this one in particular is Orbital Technologies.
Wait a minute, Lauren. Wait a minute. They're not going to have a hotel in 2016. They're just talking about it, right?
Yeah. Space hotel set to welcome guests by 2016.
Have I got my calendar wrong? It's 2016 this year?
As far as I know. The clock's changed, but I think, 2016. For $1 million, you can stay in this hotel and look out the portholes. So what do you guys think? Is this hot or not?
Go on. It's just looking out portholes?
Yep, basically. That's
I'm so doing it.
Do they have a bar? I mean, for that kind of money, they should have a damn good bar.
Wait, how much was it supposed to be?
It's $1 million for...
Can you smoke pot up there?
I'm not sure.
Do they have room service?
Yeah, is it room service? Can you get 420 brought to your room?
You know what? When you're up there... It's 420 somewhere, so...
It's always 420 in space.
Always 420 in space.
I totally want space hotel. I would be on that in a heartbeat. That's like a reason to make millions of dollars is to go to space hotel.
There's no laws up there, right? I mean, no laws whatsoever.
Oh. Yeah, it's like you could be a pirate, just like in the Martian.
You could be a pirate. Yeah.
Space pirate.
It's going to be up there. Everyone's up there is really rich. Just go up there and pirate them.
But I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, but I don't know that more than one person can stay at once, you know?
It's only one person at a time. That's a lot.
Well,
that's
I mean, it might be like a family or something like that, but I don't know that there are actual rooms.
You better bring like a buttload of Xbox games or something because this kid's going to be bored as shit. Yeah, there's nothing to do. Oh,
I've seen the goddamn Earth. Get are we the there tablet. Yet?
Yeah, imagine the are we there yet.
I've always wanted to build like a titanium sarcophagus to put my body into and launch it into space.
What?
That's how I wanted to go.
Now we're going somewhere.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want to have my body float through space and hopefully, you know, some alien race could pick me up and revive me or something. And put my consciousness into it.
That's hot. Robot. Now that's hot.
Yeah.
I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's way cooler. I
like that better than the virtual crap from last week.
Hey, how long do you think it takes to fall from like an object that's in orbit, like this hotel or like the space station or something?
15 minutes.
Well, you if you're going 17,000 miles an hour, maybe you never fall. No, maybe you just have to watch out for space jump.
Well, one, you would burn up before. But no, the guy who did the parachute jump out from what? How many miles up was the Red Bull thing?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I mean, that's like a 15-minute drop.
Yeah. So all I'm thinking is, right, let's say you take the rocket or the shuttle or whatever up there and it takes a while and you have your night in the hotel or whatever. But the return journey is like they've got this special suit with a parachute and stuff.
And then they figure out that you can't pay the bill.
No, but I'm thinking you could just like dive Superman style back to the planet.
Think about how much a bottle of water must cost in space. Because you got to take into account the cost to get that bottle of water up there.
Yeah, but it's just recycled piss.
Oh.
You have to drink your own recycled piss. But if you want a Coke, though, that's an expensive Coke.
Who knows where they get the sugar from?
So that Red Bull thing, he took what? Like it was 10 minutes to come down, and he was only at 140,000 feet.
Yeah, he went up in a balloon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Red Bull Stratos.
So yeah, let's say you could dive out on your way home, 30 minutes to get back to the surface, but you're approaching Superman style at terminal velocity. I think that would be the bizzo.
But you're dead when you get back.
No. Yeah. No, I mean you've got like some kind of thing that stops the atmosphere burning you up on re-entry, obviously.
Like a cape?
Yeah, like a cape, exactly. I think it's hot, actually. You know what? I've just had a thought as well. You know how they usually have gyms in hotels? Can you imagine how much you'd be able to lift at the gym in the space hotel? You'd be like, man, I'm well strong because there's no gravity.
At least your body weight.
The astronaut that was up there a year, what was his name? He just got back and he...
Frail McBones?
Yeah, he had a hard time because
it's like that movie where, what's her name? Gravity, man. She's been up in space. She gets down. She can barely get out. She's all weak.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being in space for a year, especially without, like any kind of anti, you know, some any kind of gravity normalization.
I thought you were going to say something else there.
There's no spinning thing up there. I mean, your whole body has to just completely atrophy.
Well, and you're constantly losing bone density, too, so.
Yeah, you're going to come back like
a lot of money.
I mean, you're just up there for a day. It's probably not going to mess with you, but, you know, it's like a year. Yeah, you're going to have to go, like, be eating calcium pills all day long.
And then there's that whole extant thing, you know, you could go up there and, like, get pregnant from, like, the board.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, actually, I hate when that happens.
There's a good idea.
That show devolved quickly.
You think anybody's ever done the business in space before? You know, the old, how's your father?
Well, James Bond did.
James Bond did. Oh, you think people already have, Lauren?
What kind of weird term is that?
Oh, yeah.
What, how's your father?
Yeah, that's totally British.
Sorry about that, yeah. No, I'm just thinking
about Rogering.
I mean, what?
Yeah. Yes, Rogering, yeah.
Who's your father?
I'm just wondering if you could
Roger
be
Moore.
If you could be the first person to Roger Moore somebody in space, I don't know.
It's space booty.
No,
call.
It's been done. That's you kidding me?
It's like the 10 Mile High Club.
No,
it's been done, Lauren.
And like, how long SpaceX. Have men been going spent in space? Like, are you telling me no one?
That's not procreative
that,
sex.
That is. Well, whatever. There's been
that's
sex.
Not Roger Moore.
I guarantee it.
No, you're probably
guaranteed.
Yeah.
Wait, there's a Wikipedia entry for everything.
Do you think
Americans
have, or do you think those are like those dirty Russian astronauts?
Cosmonauts.
Those guys are doing the monkey. They're not doing it. Freakies.
And we apologize to our Russian listeners. Yeah. Once again, I think we had to apologize last week to them.
Oh, no. Apparently it happened in 2008.
Oh, right. Oh, well, never mind.
Did you just look this up on, like, Gawker?
There was a Sex and Space... concepts of pregnancy in off-Earth environments. So in 2009, with NASA planning long-term missions, Lunar Sentiment's goals were to explore and colonize space. There's a whole Wikipedia entry about two-suit and some of these people that tried to test two-suit. Oh, it's a garment designed to facilitate effortless intimacy in the weightless environments such as outer space. So they already have a suit for you to do it in.
But still inside
not
of
a
the
suit?
Station, right? They're not talking about extra vehicular here, are they?
Well, no, it's in this.
They must go out for a walk in space and do it.
There's like pictures and everything. Wow. Not of them doing it, but
no,
space doing it.
Yeah, now I'm questioning the site that you're on.
Is there a picture of Wikipedia?
Roger Moore.
Two suit is alternative. It's the number two with the word suit, S-U-I-T, afterwards. It's a garment designed to facilitate intimacy in weightless environments. It's been tested in microgravity and during parabolic flight. So that means somebody went up in like a 747 up high enough to get busy.
Oh, no, the vomit. It, the vomit comet, right? They take those things
to get high enough to where you can like get, you know, like you've seen the OK Go video where they do it in weightless.
That OK Go video.
That was really awesome. Ooh.
Greatest video ever. Well, not, but pretty close. Have you guys seen that? The OK Go?
No.
It's awesome.
Weightless video? You have to see it.
One take. How many takes they must have done? That must have cost
a lot. It is so stupid. It is so sick. You have to see it.
OK Go weightless video.
Yes.
Space video.
I'll check that out then.
Yeah.
So let's go around the people that are remaining. Mark, do you think it's hot?
Yes. I do think it's hot. If they get that suit working for spacewalks, that's hot.
You'd try it for them, yeah, would you?
It's not a selfie.
It's two suit, so yeah. I think it implies there's two people.
Uh-huh. Do you think it's hot, Lauren?
Be one suit, then.
Are we talking about the hotel or the suit?
The suit now.
No, I think the suit's actually hotter than the hotel.
Yeah, that's what I think. I'm getting confused. I'm still thinking the hotel's hot, though.
Yeah.
You know, the chance to get out there and get away from it all and watch the things blow up. And maybe you get up there at the right time, there'd be a big tsunami, and you could watch it from outer space. And, you know,
Captain Trips can pop out.
Yeah. You could get impregnated by the Borg. You could, like, you know, dodge space junk. It would be the best.
You could do the last man on Earth. You could be the guy who went up into the space hotel and the whole thing went to shit. And you could watch it all up there and then be really depressed.
And die a slow death.
Yeah, eat some space food sticks as your last meal.
Huh. Yeah, I like the hotel. It's hot. Yeah. You know what's not hot? Space food, apparently. Because whatever Luke gave to Yoda in that movie looked like crap. It looked like he was eating a turd.
Hey, what do you think would be the first restaurant
the first
in space?
The first fast food chain in space is McDonald's, baby.
Dick's.
McDonald's, Dick's, Big Boy, Herpes. Do you think it's hot, Lauren?
No, space scares the crap out of me. So I have no desire to look at it or be in it. I'm not interested.
What, even looking at it makes you scared?
Nope. Yep.
Is there a word for that? Space phobia?
I have this irrational fear that like the Earth's going to like come off of its axis and we're either going to like freeze to death or burn up. Yeah.
A society person, are you?
A what?
You're not a flat earther, are you?
No. I said it's irrational. Like, I'm aware. I think it goes along with like my fear of flying and like heights in general. So I just prefer not to.
Yeah, I don't think if you're in the space station, though, I don't think you get vertigo looking down at the Earth.
Oh, gosh.
Might be wrong, but I don't think you do.
I can't imagine.
No, never mind. Well, I think it's hot, and I think it's the future. I tell you what would happen to me if I went, though. I'd get a room that didn't have a view outside. I'd get, like, you know, one with just an internal window. Be like,
you get to see the trash compactor.
Yeah.
That's only $750,000.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
No! You know, you could look out and see Uranus.
Or you could look in.